Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents Diet Starts Tomorrow with host Sammy Sage.
I'm having a relationship with my pizza.
And Aileen Drexler.
I'm going to make you girls a hump day treat.
In a world where wellness looks perfect on Instagram.
Just doing my workout. Tuesday's arms and back.
But feels anything but in real life.
Is butter a carb?
Yes.
This is the podcast exploring the emotional side of well-being.
I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie.
From people who understand the struggle.
I am on the third day of my cleanse diet.
Hello and welcome back to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Aileen.
And today we're joined by a very special guest. It is actually my cousin by marriage, Rachel Otis. She's a somatic therapist, pleasure activist, a queer intersectional feminist, body activist, Crohn's disease survivor, and writer who holds a master's degree in counseling psychology. And I just feel like, hi, Rachel, first of all. We're sharing a microphone to paint a picture.
Yes. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi. Nice to... We met. We met at Sammy's wedding.
Yeah. So, Rachel, you really inspire me a lot. Everything that you do on Instagram for, like, body acceptance and just general... general body positivity. But I think first, can you tell us kind of, like, generally your background, how you got into this, and a little bit maybe about your struggle with weight and with Crohn's.
So basically, I was brought to this journey by being diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was 14. And I had already been existing in a bigger body before then. And so when I got sick, it was kind of a perfect storm of the medical world and diet culture coming together to focus more on my weight than on my disease. And so that really solidified a lot of my own eating disorders and exercise disorders. Just making them more intense. And along the lines, after I call myself the Goldilocks of therapists because I could not ever find one that I liked. and so eventually I found what is called a somatic therapist. And she also disclosed that she has chronic illness. And so that just opened up the door for me understanding that this was the pathway I wanted to be on after undergrad. And so for me, being a somatic therapist basically means holding a lot of space for the mind-body connection. So in any given session, we might veer from traditional talk therapy in that the body is really compassionately but explicitly brought in. So like, what's happening for you right now? And that's something that really touched me along my path. And that's kind of what brought me here after just a casual 5 years of graduate school hell. But yes, after I survived that, I made it here. And also when I was in grad school, to be a therapist of this sort of like radical nature, I was looking around at who was also becoming therapists, and there really wasn't anybody who looked like me, and there wasn't really anybody with chronic illness. So it was a big reminder that a lot of the way that Sammy introduced me, kind of those identities are the communities I get to work with now. So that's just like a snippet of my spiel.
Well, thanks for also defining somatic therapy, because I personally, I've never heard that term before. So that's really interesting. And congratulations on 5 years of graduate school. Not easy.
So just going back to like your journey of discovering, finding the right therapist, finding someone who could really understand the effect of your chronic illness on your weight, what was the process of sort of like dealing with Crohn's and then you know, kind of integrating all the different advice you were getting from doctors who were trying to kind of like blame it on weight rather than a disease.
Yeah. So it is a very like interconnected process. So I appreciate that you named it that way. I would say essentially, I think it's important for me to name that I was also being treated at the number one children's hospital in the entire world, which is Boston Children's Hospital. And so like I had the best team, and I still communicate with my doctor to this day and give her lots of feedback about my experience. So I do and did love her. But the issue was like it was very situated in as we were still figuring out what's even going to work to support your Crohn's and not being active. They were just so hyper-focused on losing weight at the same time. And for people who don't know what Crohn's disease is, quick snippet, essentially it's an autoimmune disease where my immune system is attacking my GI tract. So just like, you know, casually my intestines and colon, super fun topics for adolescents to talk about. So what is very interesting is most Crohn's patients become emaciated when they get sick, because basically you're holding nothing in your body. And so while I did lose some weight at 14, I was actually obsessed with, I was so angry that I did not become emaciated from having Crohn's. I was like, really? I'm going to be this sick and I'm not going to get like skinny as hell? What is happening? And that's also when we started to bring in like the both and of the holistic world and the medical world. And the first time I met with someone, now I have to say the holistic world, extremely fat phobic as well. So there's not going to be a lot of reprieve unless you find the right people in either realm if you exist in a fat body. And I self-identify and use that term as a descriptor. But I did have an herbalist once tell me that she found it easier to work with bodies like mine, because essentially it represents your body as like, I'm not going to let you die. You're not going to starve to death. You're going to stay alive, even though nothing is functioning. And so I kind of took that away from that experience. And I was like, all right, my body is like really actually on my side, trying to keep me going. So from there is kind of like the jump off point of finding those right people. And for therapists or psychiatrists or psychologists, they can't be, for me, they couldn't be too clinical. Like all they were knowledgeable about was my Crohn's. And then they couldn't be too like woo-woo where I was educating them, because that didn't feel good either. So yeah.
Is the treatment for Crohn's, can you just clarify, is the treatment for Crohn's, but you need, sorry, is the, there is a treatment though for Crohn's. I know there's no like cure, but there's a treatment that is clinical, right? Or are you saying that you tried a holistic approach that isn't like medicine?
No. So the hard thing about Crohn's is you could put like 10 Crohn's patients in a room and we could all have different symptoms and different treatments. But mine was more moderate to severe. So all the medicine we were trying in different ways wasn't working until I got to this stage of trying infusions. So I've actually been doing infusions for 20 years. So every 7 weeks of my life, I go to the hospital for like a few hours, hopefully not more, but sometimes more, and get an infusion of a medication called Remicade. And I was just only doing medicine for a long time, but when I was in undergrad, I was still getting really sick. Could have been that I was like still partying, but that's the thing. I was like, I'm not giving that part of college up. So that was when I also had to keep like branching out. And I discovered things like being gluten-free or refraining from eating dairy. You can hear the sadness in my voice. Like, really helped me not wake up every morning and, you know, for lack of being too graphic, just vomiting or being sick, which even with hardcore medication, I was. So it's very, my journey has been very both and since then. And not to date myself too much, but back in the day when I became gluten-free, it was not a thing. So it was just a whole new world. No one knew what I was talking about.
Guys, as many of you know, I've been on an alcohol-free journey. Please don't hold it against me that I just said journey, but I have. And one thing that I've really missed on this journey is beer. But now with Athletic Brewing, I'm able to get that delicious beer-like taste in my mouth without any of the alcohol. It's amazing. Just so you guys know, I used to love sours. I'm a big sour drinker and I really miss that taste. And now I don't have to miss out on it. It's amazing. Whether you're trying to cut back or you just want to explore a non-alcoholic alternative, Athletic Brewing is often a game changer. They offer a variety of different full-flavored brews with no alcohol, allowing you to sip and celebrate anytime and anywhere. Do you like hazy IPAs, sweet fruity sours? Now you can enjoy this style without the hangover the next day. They offer hassle-free delivery right to your door when you order at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic brews bevs you can drink anytime, anywhere, and still go right back to whatever you were doing. It's a great fit for parenting, playing sports, watching sports, doing chores, late nights, and early mornings, so you can imbibe without worry. Try Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers for yourself. Use code DST to get 15% off your first order at athleticbrewing.com. That's code DST at checkout for 15% off your first order. Near beer, exclusions and conditions apply. Athletic Brewing Company, fit for all times.
So, like, at what point in the treatment of your Crohn's or in, like, the journey did you come to the realization that a lot of the treatment was kind of or being affected by fat phobia? And at what point did you start to kind of change your relationship with your body to accept it and be happy and proud of it?
Yeah, so that journey, like that part of my journey, really didn't happen until after college, when I discovered that there were other people like in disability justice movements, but also in, of course, we have the offshoots of what we know now as body positivity. I tend to not use that phrase because of how it gets co-opted and just like doesn't mean that much now because we're just using it to sell more shit. So I do consider myself a fat activist, and there is like a whole radical movement of people just accepting their bodies, and that really started by the visual. I actually noticed like the platform of Instagram itself providing a visual space to literally just see other bodies that looked like mine doing shit that I've always been told I couldn't do, like wearing a bikini or popping into a headstand in yoga. It's revolutionary, and also as like a little psychology nerding out moment, we have these things called mirror neurons in our brains, and that's why representation is so important, because if we see someone that looks like us doing this thing, in a way, our mind and bodies are also doing that thing with them and can be like encouraged to know we can do it on our own. So for me, it was really starting to see people and kind that looked like me and kind of pull out of just believing everything that the medical world was selling me, because they literally put me into a program called Optimum Weight for Life. And I just found my like food packet from that, and I was just like,
what did they make you do?
Like, I literally had to track everything, and it's essentially they amped up my own eating disorder, right? Because like I was already severely restricting. I grew up in New England, where for some reason almost everyone looks the fucking same. I also went to private school, so then it private Catholic school, it got even more intense. So I was somehow surrounded by like size zero bodies for like a lot of my life, which is not even, that's wild to think about. But I think also just moving through, seeing more people. And again, it's interesting I say post-college because that's also the time that I really had to like exit Children's Hospital because I was getting too old. But I love my doctor so much. She's like, I'll see you through college. But when I was 23, she's like, gots to go. But I think that also helped me in some ways. But in other ways, it hurt because every single solitary doctor I've ever seen, except for my GP, who I have kept since I was 13, has, I mean, as a fat-bodied person, you could go in for strep throat, and they will talk about you losing weight before they ever address your strep throat. So, same thing with Crohn's, and that's why it can be very dangerous, because I've even had GI doctors suggest that I, like, cut my stomach and eliminate part of it. And when your disease is in that part of your body, that's when you really start to realize, like, ooh, this shit runs deep, because that's not gonna heal me in any way. So yeah, I think it was kind of the both and of the age I was. I consider myself an elder millennial, and it was like good timing for Instagram to pop up in my life and see other people. And it's still probably to this day, I'm working on the eating part of my life, because that is just ever evolving, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a lifelong process, literally. So can you share like what it means to be a fat activist, and then also like how it comes to play in your life as a therapist? Like if somebody comes to you and you could tell is like very fat phobic, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So I also want to say, just to give you a frame, this is like, as I describe myself this way now, this is coming from like my majority of my life, hearing the word fat would like literally induce like such an intense shame response. And of course, typically fat is associated with bad or negative. So what is interesting is like coming to that place for me basically meant that, just like I use the term queer to identify, and how at one point queer in our vernacular was like extremely negative, and queer people have reclaimed that. That's how I see the term fat and fat activism. For me, it's like neutralizing that term as a descriptor, and at the same time advocating that no matter what size your body is, you deserve more than adequate healthcare, mental and physical, and to be treated with respect. So for me, being a fat activist really just means the only visible part of my identity, interestingly enough, is that I'm fat. So people cannot see that I have Crohn's. People can't see that I'm Jewish or that I'm Mi'kmaq Native American or, you know, all these other parts. They can sometimes see I'm queer, but mostly they choose not to because I dress feminine and people are ignorant. So this is the only part of my identity people really see. And I'm like, all right, I want to reclaim that, because nobody can really take that identity away from me and try to turn it negative if I don't let them. And what's interesting is as soon as I can have really claimed that and stepped into that space, the clients that I attract in terms of my therapy practice are typically represented in my marginalized identities. So I have a lot of queer clients, I have a lot of chronically ill clients, and I have a lot of fat body clients. Majority of them are coming to me because they share that identity with me and they actually feel safe to work through and externalize fat phobia. And I just want to clarify, I do use that term. There's some like discrepancy in the fat activism world, but as a therapist, I actually see it as important. And like, I would love eventually to get that word put into the DSM, which is like our diagnostic manual, just like homophobia is in there. Because it is a fear of fat, I think.
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Nuuly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there. And they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life. So it's great to be able to rent them. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles. But right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Nuuly, that's Nuuly.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com, Nuuly with two U's, with code DST20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Can you talk about what the discrepancy is within the somatic world about that? Or within the fat activism world?
The discrepancy is just, it's like a very newer concept that some people believe you shouldn't use the term phobia in relation to this concept, because they think it almost like takes away from people with mental illness who have other phobias, and they see this as an extension of what it is, which is an internalization of societal norms, because if society never deemed fat as bad, then we wouldn't really give a shit. But I don't see it that way, because I am a therapist, so I see it in the other way, which is it actually validates what it is, and it could create protocols for therapists trying to actually work on this stuff, whether it's, I don't, so no matter the body size, like of course I have clients of all body sizes, no matter how socially normed of my clients' bodies have been, 10 out of 10 times, regardless of body size, gender, identity, anything, every client I've ever worked with has had body image issues. And that has been the one really heartbreaking theme in the work that I've done, is that there hasn't been one client without shame around their bodies.
How do you work through that shame? Like, do you have any like advice for anybody who's listening who just wants to sort of like get started?
I think our, as like, I know you all have talked about, and like clearly is becoming more mainstream, as like now there's an obsession with like self-love. And it's like, you have to love yourself, otherwise, I don't know what, but it's not therapeutic at all. And so I like to say that like self-love is not the be-all end all of becoming okay with your body. It's like, I think just like we're talking about food, it's like gonna be a journey forever. But I'm really huge on like the first step being body neutrality. So, and I know that can sound like a bit of a what does that mean concept, but I will literally start with a client who, again, this is also true for clients who hold a lot of like physical pain in their bodies, is like, is there just one part of your body, even in this moment, whether you're in a session with me or whether you're listening to this podcast right now, that feels neutral, like it's not holding tension, it's not holding a memory of some sort? And this can get really, like when my therapist first did this with me, I was like very resistant. I was like, yeah. No neutrality. Yeah. But then I was like, fine. My right earlobe is really... my right earlobe is really fucking neutral right now. And this is where I started with my right earlobe. Apparently not my left one that day. Yeah. I was good with the right one. So, like, our bodies will also create a lot of reasons why to have resistance. But... starting with, like, is there one place I just feel neutral about? And then I know I described a little bit about what somatics is, but bringing in different modalities. So it's not just bringing in the body, but, like, with clients in a session, we might do guided meditation. So we might do, like, a body scan or some different yoga poses that feel supportive. And it also might be looking at, like, how are you holding your body? So I know I'm, like, getting in on the mic, so I'm like this. But if everyone listening right now were to take a moment and just notice, like, what is your posturing like right now? And what would it feel like to adjust your posture in this moment? So is there a way to actually get a little bit more comfortable or a little bit more in alignment? And just that very slight moment of awareness of your body and then the empowerment to know, oh, I could shift. Even just like opening my chest makes me feel a little bit more open to other things, right? That is part of the process for me. So there's a lot of things, but I do also kind of give the caveat that I don't believe in a one-size-fits-all model of anything. So clearly it doesn't work for fashion, and it doesn't work for therapy. And that's a line I've probably said in every single intro session I've ever had. So the same thing for, like, everyone's body journey. I like to give, hopefully, things that, you know, listeners can practice and then also just know it's okay to explore and be curious and have things not work and then find other things. Like, there isn't just one thing that's supposed to work for everyone.
I have a question, because I remember when I started therapy, but probably like five or six years ago, I was working with a body psychotherapist. And I remember, like, at the time I had basically like no attunement to my body. Like, I didn't understand anything. Like, I didn't have any frame of reference for what you were just saying. So where does someone who maybe, like, has never, like, has zero connection to their body, essentially, where does that person start?
This is going to be a really annoying therapist answer. But I would say we actually have to start by understanding why it's not safe for them to be in their bodies or mm-hmm. why they have the disconnection from their bodies mm-hmm. and kind of, like, be with that or sit with that first, which is also why somatic therapy in particular, I think if somebody is in like an extreme crisis, right, survival mode, they're not really going to be able to access their body. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it's like, we are doing somatic therapy because I'm a somatic therapist, mm-hmm. but maybe for the first five sessions, they're just talking. Mm-hmm. But, like, to me, that's the first step to them building safety. So, like, maybe in the sixth session, I could just ask them, hey, when you just use that particular gesture, did you notice any feelings popping up in your body? Also, like, a basic thing to do with someone who has no connection is to do, like, I will go through almost like a sensation dictionary mm-hmm. and we'll literally just list all the sensations. I've created, like, a PDF. I'm sure.
Like, what are sensations? Like,
so it could literally be, like, warmth, tingly, I feel like I'm in a quiz. Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. What are the sensations? Yeah. Everyone that you can think of.
Itching?
So, like, yeah, pain. It could be itchy. But and then if we look at pain, it could be like, is it aching? Is it stabby? Is it in one part of your body? And I know this is going to get a little woo-woo, but we might also be like, if your pain had like a color right now, what would that be? Or if it had something to say, what would that, you know, what would it say? So there's different ways to work with that. But yeah, sensations can be, it's important to provide clients with sensations that they might perceive as both quote unquote positive, quote unquote negative, but also neutral, or see how they could be, you know, in different situations.
Can you like heal your internalized or externalized fat phobia, but also want to lose weight?
I'm going to sit with that for a minute. So can you kind of be like, on the path to healing an externalized fat phobia, but at the same time be holding a process of losing weight?
Or desire to want to.
I would explore where the desire comes from, because that usually is like the key factor for me in answering that question. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, but because I am chronically ill and have gone through the ringer with like legit best doctors in the world still trying to get me to lose weight, quote unquote, for my health, I really sit with clients and break that down if that's something that does come up for them. And I ultimately believe in bodily autonomy, so I don't think saying that is inherently negative. However, 99% of the time, when we get to the core of it, why do you want to lose weight? Because we live in a society that says when you're in a smaller body, you'll feel better, look better, be more socially accepted, so on and so forth. And so that's where it gets a little bit of that painful gray area, because we really can't separate ourselves from our society. But I will say, as a therapist, what's important to me is that I'm not just like addressing this with clients in sessions, that I'm actively out in the world trying to advocate for them and us and all bodies in different ways, even if it's like speaking on a podcast about it, so that more people maybe have access to that information.
The last thing I wanted to learn about is pleasure activism, because as kind of like the resident hedonist of this podcast, I would say, I want to, how do I turn my hedonism into pleasure activism, or is that not possible?
Oh my God. I think it's probably already happening. You just didn't have a name for it yet. Okay. So pleasure activism is a concept created, and it's like, I would say it's a way of life, but it's also a book written by Adrienne Marie Brown, who also has Emergent Strategy and other books. But for the times that we're in, those are epic reads right now. But pleasure activism, the way that Adrienne basically poses it, is every form of activism that you're already doing, making it the most pleasurable experience possible, which I feel like your activism has an edge of hedonism, right? Like, oh, yeah. You're like, yeah, I live for this shit. Yeah. Like, yeah. And that's what she's saying, is like, why should it be something that only is like draining you and not pleasurable, when you could like instill this in your whole life? And it's also about like physical pleasure and allowing those pathways to come in. So as a therapist, one of the number one concepts I work with is just how our nervous systems are hardwired to survive, which means hardwired to identify pain. And those same nervous systems don't give a shit about pleasure. They're like, oh, that thing was awesome. But remember that thing that happened 2 days ago that really fucking sucked?
Yeah.
Like, this happens for me all the time. I might teach a workshop and I could get amazing feedback from 19 people. The 20th person will tell me something and my brain is like, fixate.
Yeah.
Don't stop. Yeah. And it is like a literal.
It's like with comment sections and stuff too. Like you read one bad one or one bad DM. You're just like, yeah, cool. Like the praise. Oh shit. This person says a wild thing, a wild outlandish thing. And you remember it for 20 years.
So that's also because like we have evolved so fucking quickly technology wise that our systems aren't even used to like the comment section yet. So, and like our nervous systems aren't used to like knowing all of the atrocities of the world. Like there's a lot of shit we're not fully prepared for. But with this one thing, I like to tell everyone this, like if there was one thing anyone took away from this podcast, I would say starting to practice attuning your nervous systems to pleasure in all forms. It could literally be like you're taking a sip of your morning coffee and you're like, oh my God, this tastes so fucking good. Just be there in that moment for like 1 minute. And it could be like, you know, you're taking a walk in the park and the sun hits you and you're just like, oh, thank God. And it could also be getting positive feedback and letting yourself really take that in. Or celebrating yourself when you have a win in therapy. I have confetti poppers for my clients. So when they have wins that nobody else gets to see but me, I'm like, oop, confetti popper moment. Let's go. We do those.
Who cleans that up?
It's still on my floor. Yeah. I also have therapy jazz hands as well. So I do a little combo.
Yeah.
But when my clients are like, no, the confetti poppers are going to make a lot of mess. I'm like, here, I'm going to turn my computer. I can see all the confetti from all my clients. It gets cleaned up every once in a while. But like the number one thing is just take those moments and know that you deserve pleasure. And also we're very sexually repressed culture, so like pleasure activism is very directly.
Can you share
about
the title
like
again?
Pleasure in that form too.
Got it.
And cool. I couldn't recommend the book more. It gives insight from like a lot of different perspectives, which I think is important.
Can you share the title again? Is it
pleasure? It's literally called Pleasure Activism by Adrienne Marie Brown.
Cool.
So, like, you're saying we should have more joie de vivre, basically.
Joie de vivre.
I'm always trying to make joie de vivre.
This type of practice leads you to having a joie de vivre. You can't just have a joie.
Just, like, joieing it up, basically, is what I'm inviting my clients to do. And they'll usually look at me like.
But there is a difference between, like, what Sammy said, like, hedonism and, like, a pursuit of, like, indulgence at every stage of everything you do versus focusing on or, like, seeking only comfortable situations versus, like, appreciating pleasure.
I'm going to blow your mind right now. Oh, no. You might actually be more of a pleasure activist than a hedonist because typically hedonists aren't like, yeah, let me go do like a million morning announcements.
Well, they're like, have to work. So
yeah, there's that. I mean, but you get to combine it. So right. Your hedonist side might be the part that's like, fuck everyone, I'm going to indulge in everything.
Yeah.
The pleasure activism is like, I'm going to channel that to do good for other people. Like, I have an abundance of energy that I've stored up and now I'm gonna like use that for others.
Right, fair. I mean, my energy is questionable.
Well, wait, Sammy, you and I were talking about this sit versus go run, and we'd rather sit, but but though knowing there is pleasure in like the post run feeling, but sometimes we'd rather just sit. So I can't unpack it right now.
I mean, there are some people in the world who would rather go run and they get their pleasure genuinely from going running. Avi would be a case in point. Like, he does not have pleasure in sitting the way we have pleasure in sitting. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But guess what? While you're sitting, you could like be doing something epic at the same time, I'm sure. So
yeah, having a good combo.
Texting. So it could be also a mindfulness exercise or an exercise in mindfulness, because you're like, okay, at least you're sitting, but then at least appreciate that feeling that it's giving you. Like, instead of doing like seven things at once, like eating, for example, you know, don't, like if you're eating something delicious, don't like distract yourself a billion ways and enjoy that meal.
Totally. Yeah. And that's obviously really hard for people. But again,
you yeah, just, no, I can't do
you,
it.
Like, I want to give you and Sammy permission to just sit. Yeah. Sitting is a form of pleasure activism. Also, get ready for this. Sitting is like fucking yoga. Sitting can be mindfulness, and sitting actually doesn't mean that you're not moving. I like to remind everyone, even if we're just sitting, especially if, like, imagine people in the world who can't move their bodies because they have physical disabilities.
Yeah.
Even when you're sitting, there's so much shit going on inside of you, like physically.
It means sitting and growing a baby at this moment. Yeah, like there's a baby
growing. Yeah. Like you're sitting. I tell this to clients so much who are newly pregnant, when they're like, I don't get, like, why. I'm just like so tired. I'm like, you're just casually growing another human inside of you.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it's wild.
All right. So I really feel like everyone listening should go try to bring one bit of pleasure activism into their life this week, and then let us know like what you did and how you made pleasure an activist moment rather than a hedonist moment. Yeah.
I'm into that. I like that challenge.
Yeah. The pleasure activist challenge. It's like the ALS ice bucket challenge, but new.
Literally somatics in action, which means you're just going to be paying attention to what's going on and what makes you feel good.
I'm into it. Well, everybody, do the challenge. Let us know. DM us at Diet Starts Tomorrow what you have accomplished in pleasure activism this week. And how can people find you, Rachel?
Yes. So I'm very much active on my Instagram, which is somewhere under the rainbow. Gonna throw some underscores in there. Just to keep it complicated. And then my website is racheloticetherapy.blog. And if you have inquiries about joining my client wait list, you can always email me, racheloticetherapy@gmail.com. So yes, it's so great to connect with you all here. And thank you again for having me. I feel like I could just talk to you all forever about these things. So
we can do it again.
There might need to be a part two at some point. But yeah, there's so much good stuff. So thank you.
Well, cool. Thank you. Everybody go check out Rachel's website, Instagram, somewhere underscore.
So it's somewhere_the_rainbow.
Okay.
This was like before I was like turning it into a thing, but I never rebranded. So there's that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. As usual, you know what to do. Follow us at Diet Starts Tomorrow, at Sammy, at Aileen, email us dst@betches.com. And, you know, just rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend about this podcast. Even if you hate it, tell a friend, maybe they won't agree and love it. So go tell a friend, and we're always with you
through thick and thin.
Diet Starts Tomorrow is produced by Sean Kilby and Jorge Morales Pico. Editing by Stacey Wong and Sean Kilby. Social media by Sydney Rafe. Guest booking by Nicole Pellegrino. Be sure to follow at Diet Starts Tomorrow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to dst@betches.com.
Betches.